Okay, is that better?
A bit better, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Greg Tingle reporting for Media Man Australia. We're speaking to living legend of Australian professional wrestling, Steve Crusher Rackman. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Thank you, bro.
So, Steve, tell me about the glorious days of professional wrestling in Australia, say from around the 1970 period to about 1980, and how and why the business has changed today, both the pros and the cons.
Well, the business has certainly changed. Today, wrestling is more about championship, like an ongoing serial.
Mm.
WWE came to Melbourne a year ago. They packed the Telstra Dome out there.
Yes.
It was a sellout crowd in 1 hour.
Yeah, but when we talk crowds, the WWF, they're the ones filling up the stadiums, but the local promoters here in Australia are not enjoying anywhere near the success they used to back in the days of Festival Hall and Sydney Stadium.
Well, that's true, but the way wrestling has gone now, you know, it's very hard to compete with a show like the WWE. They probably had 30 cameras.
Yeah.
Everything is Hollywood script-like.
Yes.
Everything is done to military precision. It's a show.
Yes, and
with some wonderful athletes and some wonderful characters.
Yeah, and the top liners have actually made the transition to other forms of entertainment. I mean, the Rock, Mick Foley, Mankind, Bret Hitman Hart, and others are enjoying success in the mainstream as well.
Yes, they are. Well, they become household names and celebrities, American and global celebrities.
Yes, now just winding back the clock to say around circa 1970, 75, when you were wrestling here in Australia. Now, many of the stars didn't go mainstream, but there was a lot more genuine celebrity just for the wrestling business per se, but people weren't really looking to go into other entertainment forms back in those days.
Oh, no. If it was introduced back in those days, it would have been completely out of the wrestling character.
Yes, I mean, but today they can talk openly. We talk about the entertainment portion and the sports, but back then it was nothing but fair dinkum, and no one would basically even speak a word out of turn, even suggesting that there was just a little bit more entertainment involved than physical endeavour.
Well, you know, it was basically about wrestling moves, which followed on from amateur backgrounds.
Yes, so back in those days, what made a good match or a great match? And even tell our audience about a couple of the matches that you participated in where the crowd and the promoter basically really got into it because it was just that enormous charisma that just put bums on seats and people would talk about it for months.
Well, that's right. I mean, fellas like Mario Milano and Cyclone Negro, Spiro Soria and myself, we had some wonderful matches whereby it was not uncommon to see capacity houses in every town every night.
Yes. So
we worked for 46 weeks of the year, and we did about 6 matches a week. Flew from city to city and from country to country. It was hard work. It was financially sound, and you do a lot of travelling. You meet a lot of people.
Yes.
And you have a lot of fun.
When the Americans came to Australia, how did that How did that affect the workers in the dressing room as well as the in-ring action? And what were some of the big matches that you competed in against some of the Americans? Yes.
They do wonderful radio and television interviews. Excellent with a microphone.
Yeah. Look at The Rock and Hulk Hogan. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Just extremely talented men earning millions.
You were somewhat of a voice piece for, or a mouthpiece for some of the wrestlers here after the wrestling or even during it. You were also acting as a manager, Steve. Be like an army situation where some of them, they were big brawlers, but they may have not been so great on the stick, but if you did some of the promotion for them on the interview and they got in the ring, they'd turn into absolute monsters.
Oh yes, there wasn't very much love lost between any of them. Sometimes it was difficult to get some of them into the ring sober.
Now on that point, do I understand correctly that at some point, did you actually fight the late, great Andre the Giant?
Yes.
He was a big drinker, wasn't he?
Yes, I sat behind Andre coming back from the 12 o'clock special from Perth one night to Melbourne, and he drank 27 cans of beer, and he had two whole chickens.
Was that before or after your match with him? Well,
and we turned away 3,000 people from Melbourne's Festival Hall on that occasion.
Well, so how would you actually plan a match with Andre the Giant?
Well, you've got to try and get him off his feet.
Okay.
I mean, you can get an elephant off its feet if the elephant loses its balance. Same could apply to him. It's over 7 feet and 500 pounds.
Yes.
He's quite a big boy. But I managed to get him on his knees at one stage and pummeled him in the head. But inevitably he was too big and too strong that the match was declared a disqualification after about 7 minutes.
And Andre only ever lost one or two matches in his career. I think there was one or two to Hulk Hogan, and that was about it, wasn't there, with Andre?
So I believe he had quite a career, but you know, he was probably in the prime of his wrestling career when he came to Australia.
Okay.
And he was a wonderful draw card.
So in the actual match with Andre, like, it's fairly well acknowledged with many wrestlers, they're very street tough, and others are just more of an amateur style but not so street tough. So you've got these conflicting styles. How would you say, do you think Andre, would you want to say, held back, or was he a little bit careful to make sure that neither of you ended up in the hospital permanently? How did that work?
Oh, well, I'm sure Andre was the same as anybody else. He didn't want to see anybody physically damaged. He was a sportsman. He was a very, very large athlete. All he wanted to do was to pin his opponent fairly and squarely.
Yes, and in matches with yourself, did anything ever get out of hand where it started off as a wrestling match, but it sort of ended up like a street fight? There might have been a bit of genuine disenchantment between yourself and your opponent?
Oh yes, I took the strap one night to Spiros Arena.
Yeah.
gave him 12 of the best across his back. That was in full view of 10,000 people at the Festival Hall in Melbourne. Well, of the building into the street. The bouncers employed by Festival Hall said, okay, make a run for it, which I did. By several thousand angry, screaming Greeks.
Well, well, it doesn't...
I managed to get into the dressing room door, and all I could hear for a couple of hours after was the pelting of rocks and bottles.
Well, it doesn't really happen like that these days. The only thing I can think of close is when Paul Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan, or when Hulk Hogan joined the NWO. That's the only examples I can think of anything even coming remotely close.
Oh, yes, but you see, you've got proper security at those venues in the United States.
Yes. Yes.
But that was different in our day. You literally had to fight for your life sometimes to get in or out of the ring, back to the dressing room.
Yes, and after the real glory days of when you were wrestling on the down spiral as it was declining, now what was the actual final match or series of matches, and what year did that occur when they were doing that, at whether it was Melbourne or Sydney, when Channel 9 was involved?
They got out of the wrestling game in 1977, I believe.
Yep.
And they never went back into it. I think that the way it is at the moment, it will always have a great number of fans watching it. Foxtel apparently rank very well.
Yes.
It's exposed to a fair bit of airtime. They do very well with their pay-per-views. And that in itself, I think, is that's proof that the popularity is still there.
How important is it to have television time for a wrestling promotion?
It's very, very important. But of course, you know, from 1977 to up until today, I did thousands of club wrestling shows.
Yes.
And shopping centre wrestling. That was done without any television, without any publicity whatsoever. In fact, I'm still doing Mount Pritchard after we're into our 26th year.
Well, so if the venue is right and there's a loyal following and you've got like a captive audience in a club, it can still be a viable venture.
Well, I'm sure Mount Pritchard do very, very well with it.
Yes.
You can't get a seat an hour before the show.
Wow.
The kids line up outside the doors.
Yeah.
An hour before the show, and you know, the parents usually go and play the poker machines, have a meal, have some beverage, which is good for the revenue of the club.
Yes. Do you ever find that you might even see some of the same faces in the crowd, but they just might be looking a touch older, like because you might get the father who used to be a fan when he was a boy, and then he's got his son there today. They're still sticking with the wrestling.
Or the shopping centre that we're operating in by older people.
Yes.
And they introduce me to their children. But Westfield's and Langley shopping centres used to find the wrestling was the biggest draw card of all.
Yes.
And of course they used to do their merchandising through the wrestling, and the shops benefited. You know, it was good to see the centres full.
Yeah,
it would last for about half an hour.
Yes. When Jim Barnett got the Yanks out of Australia back in 77 and they stopped televising, how many more shows, if any, did they have, and what sort of audiences were they gathering once the Yanks were pulled out and there was it was off TV?
Well, I immediately began the club operation.
Okay.
I approached approached the biggest clubs in New South Wales, and we had our regular shows, which created a lot of interest in the communities like Reevesby Workers Club, Manly Leagues, Penrith.
Was this in 77 or 78?
I started Reevesby in 1977.
And so what happened to the American champion? How did you decide the way it had worked with crowning an Australian champion?
Well, we started off with a whole new ball game based on the way it was presented by the Americans.
Okay.
For instance, club wrestling prior to my coming into it was rounds were the way of the duration of the match, six 3-minute rounds.
Yeah.
Well, I decided to stop that, no rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Do it on the same style, introduce some tag team matches, and we used to have eliminations for the light heavyweight title and the heavyweight title, which was very similar to the way it was done by the Americans, and it was very successful.
Yeah.
We had capacity crowds for years.
Yes.
And Mario Milano decided to live in Australia. That was a tremendous help. I used to fly Mario up from Melbourne all the time, and we would do 1-2-3 week tours all through New South Wales and Queensland and Victoria. So we were probably just as busy after 1977 as before, but we didn't do the flying, we did the driving.
Yes, and now obviously a lot of this is memories, like there's the odd videotape or two around, but it's not the same as being there live. As you know, Steve, there's a particular group in Australia which are interested in doing a documentary on the glory days of professional wrestling. What are some of the secrets, or even some of the pseudo-secrets, to produce a documentary which will fully retain the integrity of the sport to make sure they get the full picture of what professional wrestling was in the glory days back in Australia?
Yeah, well, it's a pity where you can't find more of the old videotapes. I don't know where they are. Channel 9 claimed not to have them.
But there was a couple released a few years ago, wasn't there, with Mark Jacko Jackson and...
Yes, I believe so. I didn't see them. So I really don't know where they've gone, but they were certainly entertaining.
Yes.
But they were in black and white. It didn't have the spectacular aspects of today's shows. I mean, for anybody to get a start with the WWE, he really has to be a superb entertainer.
Yes.
With very high quality skills. Not necessarily as a wrestler, but as an entertainer. Wrestling, it's entertainment.
Yes, and the funny thing is, for perhaps 5 years prior to that, they might have been working shows for next to nothing, maybe $50 a match, but all of a sudden they go to the WWE and they may be presented with a $100,000 or $300,000 contract. So it's a massive jump in salary going from independent or the smaller promotions to the big show.
Well, it certainly is, and of course the WWE have got thousands of wrestlers to choose from, so they can pick the very, very cream of them.
Yes.
Being assured that they've got the best quality, and you know, the best quality would always produce the best product.
Yes.
And they're all making millions.
Yes. Now you're about to leave Sydney for Queensland. Are you done with the wrestling for good, or do you think if we get together the right documentary, we may be able to possibly get comment to make, and perhaps you could help steer some of the creative direction to make sure the production is that it everything should be, like, to make sure it's right?
Yes, I'm sure I can be of some assistance there, Greg. I'm going up to the Gold Coast to retire. I'll continue to do the clubs that operate here. I've got some be looking after that for me. And from time to time, I'll be in Sydney, and I'd be pleased to assist.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Steve Krasurakman. We look forward to your participation in the wrestling documentary, which Brett Clements of Ambient and Hit TV will be putting together, and we look forward to future contact. Thanks, Steve.